Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. According to a recent investigation in The Nation magazine, the wireless industry has used the same playbook used by the oil and tobacco industries. The key insight is that an industry does not have to win the scientific argument about safety. It only has to keep the argument going. The goal is to deceive the public and create the appearance of scientific uncertainty while making people think that cell phones are safer than independent science suggests. According to The Nation piece. Decades ago, the wireless industry's own scientists privately warned that there were serious questions about wireless radiation's links to cancer and genetic damage. Well, here we are today. Cell phones are now ubiquitous. The industry argues that an increasingly connected society needs better data networks, and it's pushing to develop even higher speed 5G networks across the country. Last year, California Governor Jerry Brown vetoed legislation that would give telecommunications companies easier access to the public infrastructure to install their antennas. But dozens of other states are moving ahead. So, what does the latest science reveal? And what does the industry say about the science? Mark Hertzgard is an investigative journalist and co-author of The Nation magazine piece called How Big Wireless Made Us Think That Cell Phones Are Safe. Hi, Mark. Welcome to the show.
Hey, Rose. Good to be here.
It's great to have you. We're also joined by Dr. Devra Davis, an epidemiologist and founder of Environmental Health Trust, a nonprofit focusing on environmental health risks. Dr. Davis joins us from Washington, D.C. Hi, Devra. Welcome back to the show.
Nice to talk to you again, Rose.
It's great to have you. Mark, this is such an incredible investigation. Yesterday, we did a show about how big oil, specifically Exxon and Shell Oil, knew for decades that burning fossil fuels contributed to climate change, but spent many, many years funneling doubt, and funding lobbyists. And according to your piece, Big Wireless is doing the same. What really prompted this? How did you learn about this?
I'd done a lot of reporting on sort of how Big Oil had learned from Big Tobacco. I did a piece in Vanity Fair, 10 years ago now, that I think was the very first investigative piece that drew that connection and showed that essentially Big Oil during the 1990s had used the very same scientists, not just the same tactics, but the very same scientists that Big Tobacco had used in the 1970s to lie about its products. So I guess I started with a certain amount of suspicion. And then I remember a few years ago just seeing in the general in the European press, I should say, that the World Health Organization in 2011 had decided that cell phone radiation was, quote, possibly, a quote, possible carcinogen. And that interested me. And I just sort of, I guess my investigative reporter's nose said, I wonder if there's something there. And so I'm now the investigative editor at The Nation magazine, and we called up Mark Dowie, who's a longtime investigative journalist here in the Bay Area, who has a lot of experience doing science reporting, and he and I got to work on this, and lo and behold, it really is striking how these industries do learn from one another, and the way that Big Wireless really borrowed the very same strategies and tactics that were pioneered by Big Tobacco and then perfected by Big Oil to lie about their products. And you quite rightly, Rose, I think in your intro there, mentioned the key insight that drives these campaigns. And it's very cynical, which is they don't have to win the argument about the science. They just have to give us the appearance that there is an argument. And that's very easily done for them. They war game science, as one industry memo that we uncovered put it. They war game science, which means that they essentially buy friendly science, attack critical science, put their own scientists on the advisory groups at the World Health Organization and other places, and thereby create this appearance that, there's nothing to see here, folks, just move right along. And in fact, if you look, the independent science is nowhere near that blasé about these dangers.
And the other argument you make is that, and we hear this from the industry, well, we just don't know enough yet. Yes, that research came out, but we need to do even more research before you can make a decision.
There's nothing wrong with more research, but let's be honest about the research that we already have. And that's where the industry argument, I think, falls down. One of our sources, Dr. Henry Lai, who's out at the University of Washington, professor emeritus there, he went through and looked. And when you actually look at the funding source for the hundreds of scientific studies that have been done in this field over the years, if you look at who funded it, that is to say, does industry fund this, or is it independently funded by, say, a university or a public agency like WHO? The results are striking. You have 2.5 times more likely that an independent science study finds that there are health effects of cell phone radiation, 2.5 more times likely than if you have it funded by industry. Now, you know, which shouldn't surprise us, but it is nevertheless pretty cynical. And as you mentioned also, I think, you know, and this to me is, as a parent, the most appalling, dastardly part of this, that just like big oil and just like big tobacco, they were told, that the cell phone industry was told privately by their own hand-picked scientists 20 years ago now, hey, there are serious questions, quote-unquote serious questions, about whether cell phone radiation causes cancer and genetic damage. And in particular, guys, don't be telling people that this is safe for children. Mm. This was a letter. We have the smoking gun memo, a letter from October 7, 1999, that was sent to the CEO of AT&T and the CEO of Motorola and 28 other big companies in this industry from their own hand-picked scientist, Dr. George Carlo, specifically warning about children and saying, hey, some of you companies in this industry are telling the public that there's no problem here for kids to have these cell phones. Stop. And did they stop? No, they didn't stop. Mm. Worse, they kept on doing it and told the world that everything is fine. And I must say, I think there is a special circle in hell reserved for people who would knowingly expose children to the risk of cancer.
Well, Dr. Davis, we've had you on the show many, many times. You've been working on this issue for years. There's so much to talk about here, but what are your thoughts on this investigation's overall argument that for years, big wireless has made us think that cell phones are safe while ignoring their own scientific data?
Well, I'm delighted that the nation got this one absolutely dead right. And in fact, a book I wrote in 2010, unfortunately, did not get much attention because that book disclosed the truth about cell phone radiation and referred to the war game memo. In fact, Lewis Lesson has been working on this issue for Microwave News for decades. It is, I think, one of the best sources of information, and yet it's very, very seldom understood that we've known about this for a long time. The dangers for children, for example, were reported by Om Gandhi, the president of the Bioelectromagnetic Society, in 1996. And we've subsequently done modeling of the brain. In fact, we're going to be releasing a new paper coming up June 5th, where we will show what goes on inside the brain from virtual reality, something that nobody's even thinking about right now, despite the fact that we're giving away millions of these devices to schools for children to go to the moon. They can go to the moon, but they don't need to have the microwave radiation going inside their heads for that purpose. So I think that this is the playbook of the disinformation industry. And as David Michaels has written about it, denial is an important part of it, and doubt is our product. That was actually in a memo from the tobacco industry to their PR people. Doubt is our product. If we can create doubt, whether it's on climate change, which I was involved with for the IPCC, or tobacco, where we finally prevailed to get smoking out of airplanes and public spaces, which I was involved with for the NAS, the same playbook is there. Go after the scientists, create doubt by competing science, by funding scientists, sometimes who are just naive and don't even understand fully what they're doing. And then we have a situation where honest people come to disagree, but they don't realize that they're basing their disagreements on dishonest information.
Mm. Mark, what has the reaction to this piece been so far? Yesterday, we did a show about the various lawsuits across the country that have been filed against Big Oil to take responsibility for knowing about the effects of burning fossil fuels on climate change and doing nothing about it, in fact, lying to the public about it. So there's all of these lawsuits. Our guest said that this is going to take years as this goes through court because oil companies have a lot of money and they're fighting this with all they have. What are your thoughts? I mean, how have people responded to this piece?
This piece has gotten, I'd say, some attention, but not the amount of attention that it warrants, I think, given the fact that cell phones are, as you said in your intro, they're ubiquitous now. Everybody has a cell phone, and we give them to our kids. And this piece talked about how that's probably not the greatest idea. You would think that that would get a lot of attention. You would also think that the new findings by the United States government on this very topic would have triggered news stories. The night before we released this piece, and so it was too late for our press run, but the U.S. National Toxicology Program, which is part of the U.S. government's National Institutes of Health, they had done a huge study on sulfur and radiation, $25 million, many years of work, and independent scientists came in to peer review the program's study. And they came out with a rather stunning conclusion that, first of all, there was clear evidence, quote-unquote, clear evidence that cell phone radiation causes cancer. And perhaps most surprising, the outside independent peer review scientists actually upgraded the confidence level of the findings of the National Toxicology Program, which kind of underscores the suspicion of a lot of people in the field that under the Trump administration, the National Toxicology Program was trying to downplay this study. Well, you know, if one of the most ubiquitous technologies in society is suddenly found by a very big U.S. government study to show, quote-unquote, clear evidence of cancer, you would think that would be front-page news, even in an era of the Trump effect, which distracts media. Mm. And yet, if you look, there has not been a single, and I mean not one, major U.S. news outlet that has covered that story. You know, they don't have to cover the Nation magazine's investigation, but that is a specific news event. How do you miss that news event? And I think that goes to the fact of this long-standing propaganda campaign by the industry that they have basically convinced a lot of journalists, just like Big Tobacco did and just like Big Oil did, that there's nothing to see here, folks.
Dr. Davis?
It might be interesting to point out that the National Toxicology Program first, that cell phone radiation was nominated to be studied in 1999. They didn't actually get the study done until starting in 2009. Why did it take a decade? Because no matter who was in power, Democrats or Republicans, there was a disinterest in investigating this particular issue. And then I should point out, as someone who's been involved and was at that meeting and has been a scientific advisor to the NTP for almost 30 years, off and on, and I'm not currently an advisor at all, that program has never, in the history of its 40 years, had a three-day independent review of anything. Mm. And the review itself was part of what Mark is talking about, the generation of doubt, the creation of confusion. People don't want to get the answer here, in part because we are all quite comfortable and I would even say some addicted to the devices. I fully agree, though, that when it comes to our children, we really need to pay attention to what's going on in other countries.
And we'll talk
about where they are taking steps to limit children's use. It's against the law in Belgium to provide a cell phone to a child age 7 or younger. Mm. You cannot use cell phones for so-called educational purposes in schools in Israel. And the reasons for this have to do both with our understanding of what the developing brain can be exposed to, as well as to the long-term impact of this on our society and on the health. Cancer is not the most important endpoint. And I say that as a cancer epidemiologist and toxicologist. I think far more important is the damage to sperm, which has been demonstrated in independent laboratories around the world. And in fact, it was the experts in male fertility who first pointed out the association with cell phone radiation and started serious studies. So if you go to the website of the Cleveland Clinic, if you go to the Indian National Medical Research Council, they tell you if a man wants to have a healthy child, keep the phone out of the pocket, because they've done scientific research where you take two test tubes of sperm from a healthy man and one gets exposed to cell phone radiation and the other is not. And in the end, within a few hours, you find there's damage to the DNA on the engines of the sperm, the mitochondria, and the sperm count, which is going to fall to zero in both cases, falls much more rapidly in the cell phone exposed radiation.
Dr. Deborah Davis is an epidemiologist and founder of Environmental Health Trust, a nonprofit focusing on environmental health risks, and author of Disconnect, The Truth About Cell Phone Radiation. Mark Hertzgard is an investigative journalist and co-author of the Nation magazine piece called How Big Wireless Made Us Think That Cell Phones Are Safe. And you can find that piece at yourcallradio.org. You can join us if you have any questions for our guests. We've done a lot of shows about cell phone safety over the years. And as you can hear, there's so much more research out now than there was 5-10 years ago. The question is this getting media attention? The toll-free number is 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. You can also email yourcall@kalw.org. And let's hear from Theodora calling from Washington, D.C. Hi, Theodora. Welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you. I wanted to point out that here in Maryland, the Maryland State Advisory Council on Environmental Health and Children's Protection has actually issued recommendations to reduce exposure to children in schools as much as possible, and they have a number of recommendations to the Department of Health and Education, including using wired, not wireless, for networks in school buildings because of how much time children spend in school. And I think what's really practical is that as schools are being built, to build them with a wired infrastructure. And I know that this is happening around the country at many levels. People are looking into how to reduce exposure. I, as a parent, was completely unaware that when I first learned about this, that there was no pre-market safety testing for long-term use, no post-market surveillance, or even that the American Academy of Pediatrics actually has 10 recommendations on how to reduce exposure. And I wonder if you could talk about what's happening with federal agencies like the California Department of Health, which issued recommendations after, almost a decade of drafts, and the CDC that made changes in their recommendations, and how we can get accountability in our federal agencies.
Thank you for that. Mark, do you want to take that first?
I think probably Dr. Davis is better on that one.
Okay, Dr. Davis?
Well, thanks. Here's what I would say. Obviously, federal agencies at this point have their hands tied very often. But frankly, on this issue, the Democrats and Republicans have a lot of blame they can share. Mm. I think that the best hope we have is there are still processes underway. We still have the rule of law, and there's right now an ANPR, an advance notice of proposed rulemaking, that is still wending its way through the FCC, where this information is relevant and will have to be taken into account. I'm encouraged, if you look at the fine print lately on the website of the FDA, it acknowledges that there are questions, and that may seem preposterous, but that's at least an acknowledgement of the issue. And I spoke to the new head of the Center for Radiological Health, and he assures me they will be making revisions once they've reviewed the science. Well, as Mark pointed out, the science is there. We have a lot of information, and it's time to step up to the plate and let the American public know that they ought to take basic precautions, starting with the fact of telling people that a cell phone is a two-way microwave radio. Most people don't understand that. And when you know that, then you ask yourself, why would I give a microwave radiating device to a young child? I wouldn't give them a cigarette or a drink.
Mark, earlier you were talking about George Carlo, who in 1999 urged CEOs to give consumers the information they need to make an informed judgment about how much of this unknown risk they wish to assume, especially since some in the industry had, quote, repeatedly and falsely claimed that wireless phones are safe for all consumers, including children. Who is George Carlos? Tell us a little bit about him.
George Carlo was the industry's handpicked scientist to do the initial scientific study back in the 1990s that was really, in some ways, the beginning of this whole propaganda effort. And that resulted from a series of lawsuits that arose in the early 1990s, 1993 to be precise. At that point, only about 6% of American adults had a cell phone. Those of you who are old enough to remember, 1993 was a novel thing. And yet, a number of those early users and a number of industry workers were coming down with brain tumors and began to file lawsuits against the manufacturers. And one of those individuals ended up on the Larry King Show back when that was a very, very big nationwide TV program. And the story went viral, and Congress got involved, and cell phone stocks on Wall Street started to dive. And so the cell phone industry's trade association immediately swung into action and called a press conference and basically said to the media, look, these phones are safe. Believe us, but to prove it, we're going to spend our own money to go out and do a scientific, serious study of all this. And George Carlo is the man that the industry chose to do this. Epidemiologist, also has a law degree, and had done work for other controversial industries, including the chemical industry in particular. He looked like he would be, as Carlo himself admitted to us, an industry guy. And yet, that's not quite how it worked out, and there's a lot of controversy about the ins and outs. But by the time Carlo wrote that smoking gun memo in October 7, 1999, to the CEOs of AT&T and Motorola and the others, he had alerted them that, it's not definitive. We don't know for sure that cell phone radiation causes genetic damage and cancer, but there's a lot of worrying signs, and the phrase that he used was serious questions. So that's who George Carlo was and is. Controversial guy within the industry. A lot of the critics of the industry hate Carlo and think that he's just a duplicitous snake. Other people say, well, look, you know, people change, and his views were shifted over the years. And what counts to me as an investigative reporter is not the motivations of an individual so much as the actions. And at the end of the day, George Carlo is the guy who put on paper to all of the CEOs of the industry in that October 7, 1999 smoking gun letter that, you guys are not only selling a product that is quite possibly very dangerous, but you're assuring people that it's safe for kids, and you're doing that even though the scientific information kind of tends the other way. So that's who George Carlo was.
And do you know how many CEOs got this letter? How many CEOs read it? Do we know?
How many read it is a different question. It was sent to 28 in total at that time. These were the 28 companies that were essentially represented on the board of directors of the Cell Phone Industries Trade Association.
That is Mark Hertzgard, investigative journalist and co-author of the Nation magazine story, How Big Wireless Made Us Think That Cell Phones Are Safe. We're also joined today by Dr. Devra Davis, an epidemiologist, founder of Environmental Health Trust, and author of Disconnect, The Truth About Cell Phone Radiation. This is Your Call, and we'll be back after this. This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Today, we are talking about cell phone safety and a new Nation investigation called How Big Wireless Made Us Think That Cell Phones Are Safe. It was co-written by Mark Hertzgard, an investigative journalist and editor at The Nation magazine. We're also joined by Dr. Devra Davis, an epidemiologist and founder of Environmental Health Trust. She's author of Disconnect, The Truth About Cell Phone Radiation. Let's go next to Cece in Massachusetts. Hi, Cece. Welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you so much, especially to Dr. Davis. She pulled me aside in 2015 when she brought a panel of world experts to Massachusetts to ask our legislators for a right to know. And she said to me, congratulations, I don't know how you did it, but Ashland Public Schools in Massachusetts is first in the nation to even have a sign hanging in our classrooms that says, turn off the Wi-Fi, turn off the devices, and never, ever keep a device. I was just incredulous. I was one parent, one tech writer, who jumped in and started doing research on this, and then I discussed it with our schools. They're still waiting for higher authorities in our education system to tell them to actually turn off the Wi-Fi, but Dr. Davis planted some important seeds when she was here with the Department of Public Health, and they have since crafted a series of four fact sheets. One for cell phones, one for cell towers, one for Wi-Fi, and one for high-voltage power lines that also emit a form of harmful radiation. So her impact, even in the few minutes that I got to meet with her personally, have had a profound effect here in Massachusetts. And we now lead the nation with eight bills filed this session to start addressing wireless radiation in public health. And Dr. Davis, I also wanted to thank you. Connected me with a gentleman in England and a scientist, Dr. Mikko Ahonen, in Sweden, and we worked together to form a nonprofit called Wireless Education, and we have distilled the non-industry-funded, peer-reviewed, published science and international medical advisories into a half-hour course that anybody can take to learn the risks and what to do to use your technology more.
Well, thank you for calling. Sorry about those clicks. I'm guessing that Cece might have call waiting. Dr. Davis, earlier in the show, you were talking about what's happening in other countries. For example, Wi-Fi has been banned in nursery schools in France. What else is happening in the United States, specifically when it comes to children and radiation safety?
Well, the other caller mentioned, the Maryland Governor's Commission on Children's Environmental Health, comprised of experts in public health, pediatrics, has issued guidance, a report that in fact says that there should be limited exposure of children to wireless radiation. That was a real game changer. And again, as Mark pointed out, if the media were able to pay attention to other things besides the Trump show, it would have received a little bit more attention than it has so far. So in Maryland, there's activity. There's some activity as well as in Pennsylvania. And in the state of California has been really fascinating because I wrote a book that you and I talked about years ago called The Secret History of the War on Cancer. And the last chapter was on presumed innocent. And among the things I asked about were cell phones. And I presented that to the state health department and talked with them after the University of Pittsburgh Cancer Institute issued an advisory to the staff, where I was then the director of the Center for Environmental Oncology and a professor of epidemiology. And that advisory directed the staff to reduce their exposure and for their families as well. The California State Health Department went through more than 20 different revisions of the document. And we know this because Professor Joel Moskowitz, Dr. Moskowitz, is with the University of California, Berkeley, and he successfully sued them to get the release of all of the versions of this advisory. The sad thing is, the first draft of the California state advisory said cordless phones and cell phones should be used with be aware of the fact that they are microwave radiating devices, and recommended against using cordless phones in homes and offices. It also recommended that the state take into account its liability. Now, the liability question is a really fascinating one. Right now, the major telecom companies cannot buy health insurance for damages from microwave radiation from devices. They have not been able to purchase that insurance from Lloyd's of London or Swiss Re or the other underwriters for more than 10 years. That's telling you something, that the insurance industry, the guys that lost their shirt over asbestos, have actually written that this might look like asbestos. So back in 2009, the state of California wrote that they faced liability issues with their employees. And now in Italy, courts have awarded compensation to people who claim successfully that their brain tumors have come about from their required use of cell phones on their jobs. And we're seeing more and more of these claims coming into the courts as well. So California and Maryland are really leaders in this effort, but there are also other states involved. Massachusetts has done an amazing job, as Ms. Doucette just said. There are several bills pending, and they have a small but determined state health department. In addition, Connecticut, very quietly, issued advice as well about 3 years ago, I believe. So there are advisories out there, and our recommendation basically is that children should not use cell phones except for emergencies. They are not toys, and if you read the fine print warnings, which you can find on our website at ehtrust.org, you'll see all the fine print warnings for all of the phones. You'll see that routers are tested at 8 inches away from the body. And we know that there's a lot that can be done to reduce our exposures, and that's why we want to urge people to practice safer technology.
And Dr. Davis, you mentioned earlier what's happening in California and the recommendations with wireless phones. We're talking about cell phones and landlines that are wireless, right?
That is correct. Cordless phones are two-way microwave radiating devices as well, and what more important is they function like a mini base station right next to the head of your bed if it's plugged in there. And it's on 24/7. We could very easily require, as a matter of technical specifications, that all cordless phones sold in the United States must go to sleep and only wake up when you need them. That's what they do in Switzerland. We could do that. I believe that's what they do in Israel as well. And the problem is that people are unaware of the issue because this is such a vacuous thing. We can't see it, we can't taste it, we can't feel it. And at this point, all we want is more and more without understanding that there are biological consequences. After all, we are electrical beings. If we didn't have electricity running through our body, we'd be dead. But the reality is additional exposures to the microwave radiation spectrum can damage human biology.
Dr. Deborah Davis? Oh, sure, Mark.
I just want to make clear to people, I personally am talking on a landline now. I highly recommend everybody, if you're listening to this and you are concerned about it, get a landline. Mm. You know, it's worth it. And also, for those of us in this part of the country, it's better to have a landline in the event of earthquake as well. That's one thing. Two, I think that this previous discussion shows that the real avenue for making change on this is at the state level, the individual state and local level, not the federal level at all. And third, there is clearly going to be resistance to this, including, Rose, in our industry of journalism. I don't know anybody who is more addicted to their cell phones and their devices than journalists, because so much of our work has to be done on that, on those technologies. But let's be clear about how this happened. Just like tobacco, just like big tobacco, big wireless has deliberately addicted its customers. You know, these, not only did they sell us a technology that was not as safe as they claimed, they deliberately addicted us to it. So that's part of the reason that there is a certain amount of resistance to hearing this message.
The other thing, Mark, is Big Wireless has a lot of money and they fund advertising on the cable shows and in magazines. And we have a question from Marnie who says, based on your experience in the media, what can we do to entice or urge broadcast and print media, including public broadcasting, to cover this?
I think that a couple things. One is to, hammer them, call them, send them emails and so forth. To ask for that. But much more important than your individual action is to get involved with other media reform groups that are doing that kind of work. And you can find them out there, the Free Press, the Media Matters, other organizations that are working at a systemic level to try and get the mainstream media not only to do better on this particular aspect, but on so many others. There's also the group down at the Common Sense Media, which is, I think, quite good, both on the specifics on how you can protect your child from this stuff and also on how you can pressure media companies to do a better job. And then third, and this is by no means the least, support independent media. You know, it's not an accident that it was The Nation magazine that did this investigation. It's not an accident that you're hearing about it on a public radio station here at KALW. As was noted, these companies are very big advertisers, and I'm quite confident that that is also a reason that our story has not been picked up the way you might expect it to be by the rest of the media, because those companies, Apple and so forth, are huge advertisers in the rest of the mainstream media. So get out there, support your independent media.
Dr. Davis, we've had you on to talk about your books, and you said you've had similar experiences with the media.
Yes, indeed, I have. Unfortunately, you know, my first book got the National Book Award finalist. The second is still being used in public health schools. And this one, Disconnect, The Truth About Cell Phone Radiation, for some strange reason, has never really taken off. And I realize that even though I was able to talk with you and a lot of important people on NPR about this, I didn't get the same pickup on all the mainstream media, just as Mark was saying, for this book. And it's still available on our website at ehtrust.org. And I think, though, that there is a tide changing. There's a big tech backlash, and it's a combination of a couple things. One is the Facebook fiasco that we understand, and we're only now getting all the information. And we know we're not getting half of all of it even, but we know that there was a deliberate manipulation of all of us in various buys that went on to create what truly was fake news. And the second really is that MIT scientists have written books and now documented the addictive properties of the technology at a physiological level. They can show with functional MRIs of the brains of children playing games and on their phones that it lights up dopamine, just like drugs, just like cocaine, just like sugar. Cell phone radiation lights up dopamine. That's the pleasure center of the brain. And those little pings that you get are people unable not to answer their phone if they're in the middle of a conversation, or people not even realizing you can turn your phone off when you really don't want to be interrupted. And we have to think about, it's a culture that has to change, because just as Mark says, we have become a part of it, and we don't even realize the extent to which we've been drawn in. I think most of your listeners will be shocked to learn something I recently learned, and I just want to explain. You know, there's this great drive that we need to expand the internet. We need more, faster, etc. 70% of the internet today is for videos, games, and movies, and half of that is for pornography. And most pornography is downloaded between 9 to 5 office hours.
Wow. Well, you'd think the Wall Street Journal would be on that story.
You would think so.
And what's your source for that, Dr. Davis?
I looked online, and I looked at those groups that have data on it, and you can I'll give you the source, and I can think if I can pull it up from something that I had with me. Let me check.
All right. Well, while you're doing that, we've got a number of phone calls. Dr. Deborah Davis is an epidemiologist, author of Disconnect, The Truth About Cell Phone Radiation. Mark Hertzgard is an investigative journalist and co-author of the Nation magazine piece called How Big Wireless Made Us Think That Cell Phones Are Safe. And we have so many phone calls about such a wide range of issues. Well, let's take Robert. Hi, Robert. Welcome to the show.
Hello. I heard that cell phones transmit a very small amount of power, I mean, much less than 1 watt. And things like microwave ovens transmit thousands of watts, and a KALW puts out thousands of watts. And I'm wondering, at the body, is the level comparable for all this background radiation? Is that comparable to what you get from your cell phone?
Dr. Davis?
Let me try to answer that. Okay. Cell phones use less than 1 watt of power, but they operate at the same high frequency, that's rates per second, as a microwave oven. Let's say about 2 billion cycles a second. Now, research that I refer to in my book and that we have on our website shows that it's not the power that makes the biological effect. It's the frequency and the pulse of the frequency. The fact that it goes like this, that it's not steady, and regular. And in fact, steady and regular pulses are being used in medicine for healing purposes. In chemotherapy today, you can increase the uptake of a chemotherapy agent into the brain by exposing it to some radiation before you admit the chemical for oncology treatment. Think about that. Think about that the next time you put your phone next to your head, which I hope you don't do. And that's why we advise people to use speakerphones and headsets. But you're absolutely right. A phone is too weak to have any biological effect from the power of the phone. It's not the power, it's the frequency, and it's the variation in the frequency and the shape of the signal and a bunch of other things that we know about that are most important. And even though we've gone from 2G to 3G, presumably 4G, and each time you move ahead, it's less power needed. It's higher frequency, and with the frequencies, we think that resonate exactly with the same wavelength as parts of our human body.
And Mark, you write about 5G in your story. What struck you about where we're going with 5G, and can you explain what that is?
5G is the fifth generation of this technology, and it's what makes this, I think, an ongoing story. It's where industry wants to go next, and it would provide much faster connectivity speeds. It's basically the technological foundation for the so-called Internet of Things, where your smartphone will be connected to your smart car and connected to your smart house. I guess connected to your supposedly smart brain, which I don't know how smart it will be after all this. But 5G, the catch to all of that is that we would all be exposed to, according to a scientific petition that's just been signed by about, I think it's up to 236 scientists from around the world, warn about massively increased population exposures to the general population. Here's why. Because the specific technology of 5G uses different wavelength radiation, and it cannot go as far in just geographical distance. So instead of having a cell phone tower every mile or three or five, under 5G there would be transmitters roughly every 250 feet along city streets, suburban neighborhoods, etc. These transmitters are about the size of a pizza box. And they would be, on telephone poles, street lights. They could be right outside my 13-year-old daughter's bedroom window. And they will, as Dr. Davis said, they'll be transmitting this stuff 24/7. And you would have, as one of our sources, Joel Moskowitz at UC Berkeley, said, basically, we would all, whether you have cell phones or not, we would all be bathed 24/7 in a radioactive smog. Mm. That's what 5G would bring if allowed to. And I would repeat my earlier point. The pushback here is coming from states and localities, including here in California. The cell phone industry wants the Federal Communications Commission to override local siting authorities here. And there'll be lawsuits about this. California has said, no, we are going to decide for ourselves whether we're going to allow 5G technologies. That's going to be a huge ongoing fight. There are literally trillions of dollars of investment at stake here, and along with the public health.
Dr. Davis, what concerns you about 5G?
Well, let me make one small correction, Mark. It's not radioactive smog. It's a radiating smog, because radioactive generally refers to ionizing. Yeah. And what makes this very challenging for the public, it's non-ionizing, as the other caller said. It's very weak in general. But what concerns me about it can be the size of a small refrigerator. It will have to be located every 100 yards or so. And it's never been tested completely for safety, but studies that you can find on our website from Israeli physicists show that 5G signal actually resonates with the human sweat duct. Now, why is that important? Because the Department of Defense is using the same frequency in higher power to create weapons for crowd control that, when high-powered, make you feel like your skin is on fire.
Wow.
Now, Professor Uri Feldman and Paul Benishai published a paper in 2008 identifying this phenomenon, that is, that it gets into your skin and it resonates with it. based on that technology, they are now pioneering in a company that is using the technology as a lie detector. The same technology that we're talking about swarming in throughout our urban environments, I actually think 5G is a bit of a shell game. It doesn't really exist anywhere yet. What has been voted on yesterday in Palo Alto was to approve building the infrastructure that could eventually house 5G, but for now, it's going to house 4G and 3G, which are, in fact, more powerful, and there are no evaluations of its effect on the environment. There's been no national environmental impact statement filed, which is a violation of federal law, and most of your listeners will be surprised and maybe not disappointed, not shocked to hear that in the omnibus appropriation bill, there is mandated 5G to be sited wherever the companies want for any tower. That's part of what got into the omnibus appropriation. Now, there are a number of Republican senators who are concerned about this, by the way. This is not a Democratic or Republican issue. This is a public health issue. And there are growing numbers of people who, when they look at this, get very concerned. There's a Michigan Republican senator who's taken a very brave position on this in the state of Michigan, which has put a halt to what they're doing. So again, the actions at the state level, 5G is driven by the demand for video and games, and frankly, you can find many different sources to the facts that I mentioned before, including Time magazine, including Forbes, about what percent. But it's, the point is, it's a very high percent, and it's a growing percent because the latest thing is virtual reality pornography, which takes up even more bandwidth and more time, and which is a real moneymaker. That's how these people make money, because they charge for people to do this. And it's really creating an enormous drain on our economy. And I would argue that it's something that we ought to think about as a country. I'm not opposed to free speech, but I am opposed to your hogging up my highway to do things that are going to keep me from getting an emergency medical response when I need it.
Dr. Davis, we only have a few minutes left. We are so inundated with questions. I'm just going to summarize a few of them. A lot of people are very concerned about radiation from the towers. What is worse in terms of exposure, the cell phone or radiation from the towers?
It depends on where you live and how long and where you are. Close proximity to a tower, to the antenna, not the tower, but the antennas, close proximity, 100 yards, is a problem for health. And studies have been done in India that show molecular markers in the blood that predict inflammation and cancer in people who live close to towers. But for your average exposure is going to come much more from the use of the phone, particularly phones that are kept in the pocket, because when your phone is there, even if you're not on it, it's on you, and it's smart, and it's sending a message 900 times a minute. It's called a handshake to the antenna. Where are you? Here I am. Where are you? Here I am. And what 5G will be designed to do is it'll be the air will be bombarded with these signals going back and forth. They're called MIMO, multiple in, multiple out, and beamforming, so that they will smartly figure out where to direct things. And it will be this cacophony of exposures that's never been evaluated for its effect on public health.
And just quickly, what are your thoughts on Bluetooth?
For certain emergency situations, people may need to use Bluetooth, literally. But in general, I do not recommend long-term use of any wireless device. Bluetooth is 1,000 times less exposure, and you can make the calculation yourself. But I recommend a wired headset, speakerphone, and frankly, forward your phone to your wired home phone. As Mark said, we need a wired home phone for the reason of security. When there's an earthquake or a fire or any or other things, your landline is going to work a lot better than your cell phone. And we've seen that in times of emergencies. Even though, of course, the big issue for us for landlines is that many counties have stopped building them altogether.
Exactly. We have an email from Martine who says, what about the plan AT&T has to phase out landlines? We have about a minute left. Mark, do you think that the action needs to happen at the local and state levels, because as you write in your piece, there's a major revolving door. Tom Wheeler went from running the industry lobbying group to heading the FCC under the Obama administration. You also report that Meredith Atwell Baker went from this FCC to becoming the president of the major lobbying group for the wireless industry. To ensure access on Capitol Hill, the industry made $26 million in campaign contributions in 2016 and spent $87 million on lobbying last year.
Yeah, this is your sort of standard issue Washington corruption. You know what they say about Washington, what's the scandal is not what's illegal, it's what's legal. All that stuff is legally done. And so I think that what's really important, yes, fight in your local states and communities, but ultimately, you know, we need a different government in Washington. We need a government that is not going to put corporate interests above popular interests. The people's health should come before corporate profits. And people can, who are listening to this, can decide for themselves which political candidates and movements would best deliver that. But I think that's where the answer is. We've really got to go to the source of this. And the source is systemic, not anecdotal.
And Dr. Davis, 30 seconds, a number of people said, we're definitely not going to abandon our cell phones. Do you have any other tips for safety?
I certainly do. I think we need to pressure the industry, and we need to work with the industry to design hardware and software so that, just like we did with cars, we made airbags and seat belts, and we have bike helmets and we have ski helmets for our children. We need the equivalent of safety devices for phones, and it can be done. And I know that because some people have tried to patent devices that already turn out to be there. And there are a number of companies out there that are trying and working in that market space to make phones safer at the time. And we know that it can be done, and we need to encourage consumers to get informed enough to demand the right to buy a safer phone. And understand that that iPad that your child has on their lap was tested 20 centimeters away, 8 inches away from a body, and wireless devices do not belong on children, period. Mm. If you can download something because they're cranky in the car, put it on airplane mode. If it's on airplane mode, it's not sending or receiving a wireless signal. So that's one way you can protect yourself and your family, is to use airplane mode as much as possible. And frankly, reclaim your private time. It's really okay to do that.
Dr. Deborah Davis is an epidemiologist and author of Disconnect, The Truth About Cell Phone Radiation. Dr. Davis, as always, thank you so much for your work, and thank you for joining us.
It's a pleasure, Rose.
Mark Hertzgard is an investigative journalist and co-author of the Nation magazine piece, How Big Wireless Made Us Think That Cell Phones Are Safe. Mark, thank you for your reporting, and thank you for joining us.
Always a pleasure. Support KLW, folks.
Thank you so much. You can find more information at yourcallradio.org. I'm Rose Aguilar. Thanks for joining us. It's Your Call.